A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book. A romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome to A Taste of Ireland. My special guest this evening is Ross Lewis, chef and patron of Chapter One and Lucio's. Ross, it's lovely to have you back in studio again. Been an interesting year for everybody in your business, I think.
Yeah, certainly has, yeah. Great to be here and thanks very much. Yes, a change is in the air, so we've made some big changes this year.
Yeah, and of course, anyone who's into their food or anyone who follows the food scene here in Ireland will know that you have a fantastic, exciting new chef in Chapter One now. So how did it all come about, and how did you decide to do that?
I suppose, you know, at the background of all this really is that I went down the stairs in Chapter One in 1993. So, you know, and I've been there, I suppose, toiling in the kitchen on the stoves for the best part of 28 years. And I suppose I just needed a break, Ed, you know. And there wasn't enough water to keep me going.
And
in all seriousness that, Chapter One, we developed and built a big brand. I was there with Martin Corbett, a partner of mine for 24 years. He'd left the last 5 years. I'd taken it on from there. And we changed the crew. We had a new crew. I put in more structures, this, that, and the other. And, we've built a great business. We have a lot of great customers, and it's a very full-on business to run. So the thing about the restaurant industry is that most people kind of, you know, what you have to realize is that really at the back of it, it's just an exchange of energy. So it's energy in, energy out. It's like, you know, the world's greatest stage play. The curtain goes across at 9 in the morning, comes back across whenever the last customers, you know, take themselves up the stairs and go into the taxi. So that energy takes its toll. And, I'd been working the kitchen and running it and running my other restaurant, Osteria Lucio, down there in Clanwilliam Terrace for a long time. And you develop a knack of, I suppose, getting by and doing it, but it's full on. And I suppose I wanted to take some control over my time. And as they say, Ed, you know, when you look at the runway in front of you and it's about the third of the size of the one behind you, you start prioritizing. Is that the word they use? Yeah.
Brilliant.
So I decided, you know, mine wasn't the energy going to take it forward for the next 5 years type of thing. You know, I felt that I had done my bit and I was kind of clear that wasn't my journey. So that was the start of it, yeah.
Is it always a bit risky, I suppose, when, you know, I suppose personality gets tied to a place as well.
Yeah.
And then for you, I suppose it's almost like your eldest daughter getting married, you're kind of handing it over. Or do you know what I mean? Did you have all sorts of mixed emotions?
Yeah, I mean, you do. And I mean, as I've said that, you know, the background of this, I'd made one clear decision that, you know, mine wasn't the energy, I think, going to take it forward. So therefore, what is the solution to that? So I was clear about that. That was a big, big step for me. And I remember, you know, my wife saying to me, Jesus, you'll never, like, you'll never do it. And I like, I'm going to do it, because I'd always felt, and I always said to her, I said, look, you know what, I'm my part of the exchange has always been as a professional that, you know, if my name is over the door, I would be there at all times to guarantee an exchange, an honest exchange, an exchange of quality. And when you're trading at those levels, at a Michelin star, you know, there's not too much error for bad days and off days and, sure, I'm not in a great mood today and all that kind of thing, you know what I mean? And we had 30-odd staff there, to run day in, day out. And so, you know, there are stresses. And so, to alleviate those stresses, then, you know, you have to make big decisions. But, you know, it was a bit like kind of, I suppose, going across the ground, you know, going on a tightrope somewhere. You know, you just got to keep your eye on the other side, because I just felt if I looked down at any stage, you know, I might have lost it and lost the bottle to do it. But I was clear that it was something I wanted to do.
Yeah, and having Lucio's, of course, which is wonderful food as well. I was there last month, I think, and I had what I would call, I won't use bad language, but, you know, food orgasm comes to mind. You know, it was just like the wow factor. So I guess you bring that wherever you go anyway.
Jimmy, but, you must have caught us on a good day.
Every day.
A very good day,
every
actually.
Day is a good day in Lucio's, I heard, you know. But seriously, that probably helped you as well.
You
weren't just walking away into the abyss, really.
Yeah. I mean, look, I was very clear, you can't go from 999 miles an hour to zero, because that doesn't work either. And look, we're all looking for this place where, you know, in my industry anyway, I think you come to kind of not end of career, but near end, you start thinking about what is the exit strategy. And that's a very complex thing. You mentioned earlier that, you know, my name is very much tied to Chapter One, and being there was very much part of it, you know. And that was part of the exchange. And so that's what really ties you to the place, you know. And so it's quite demanding from that aspect, you know.
Yeah, of course. And just to talk about the new protege now, Mikhail, right? I mean, he's, of course, famous for his wonderful creations. But
yeah.
Did you know Mikhail? Did you decide this guy is the guy for Chapter One, or was it a process?
Yeah, it was a process. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, you know, he was somebody who want, you know, I wanted to, I suppose, divest and take some more control over my time, and he wanted to kind of invest in a business that could be his and partly his, and he wanted to spend all his time, you know, chasing his dreams. So, you know, for me, it is a slow exit. I'm still
a slegzit.
Patron. A slegzit, exactly. I like it. Yeah, I'll take that one. So, you know, and it'll happen over time, and, you know, there'll be a time where Mikhail will have a controlling share of the place, and, you know, so it is, you know, in some ways, you know, I really did want. That there would be kind of a legacy, or that, you know, we put so much into Chapter One. I didn't want it to just die and just like close the door. You know, at the end of the day, what are you selling? You're still selling a leasehold in Parnell Square. And if I close the door, put the for sale sign up and go, then, you know, it's not a huge amount of value there, type of thing, you know. And I suppose a lot of restaurateurs, what traditionally can happen is, you know, they buy a freehold somewhere, you know. So theoretically, if I was brighter than what I am now, I would have been sitting on a building in Stephen's Green with my restaurant in there. So I would have been saying, right, close the door.
Some you might have had a lucky escape.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
Depends
Ross.
What way the economic wind blows, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was it for me. Yeah.
And I mean, the what you've always been well known for in the business as well is, you know, nurturing talent. And I mean, Chapter One, you know, gave birth to so many talents, really. And I mean, I know they came in talented, but they went out, I suppose, super talented. I mean, I'm thinking of the likes of Graham Neville or Gareth Byrne, Campagna, and Dax. And I mean, there's loads of others I couldn't mention to out of time, but you were really good at that. That was the amazing thing about Chapter One. Anyone that I ever chat to who was part of it, I mean, their face lights up when they talk about Chapter One. It was almost like Cahill Brewer Street or so. You know, you were churning out these amazing
without
talent.
The grants and subsidies. They'd be greatly appreciated though at this stage. I suppose any business, Ed, you know, that's there for 28 years and employing a steady amount of people, you know, they're always going to be people graduate from there and go on to do their own thing. We happen to have a lot of people in that ilk, and it was really nice that, like, Michelin last year at the awards, the inaugural kind of Chef Mentor Award was given to Ireland, to me, and that was a huge, huge feather in the cap, you know, of all the accolades and achievements, you know, that certainly is way up there, you know, for me. And particularly at the time, you know, when I was kind of going through this process of change, and when they rang me to say, actually, you know, we've given you this, and look, that could have gone to like Michelle Roux in the UK.
No, I know, it was incredible. It was like, I mean, yeah. It was just fantastic.
And so it was that was a huge one, and it really kind of signified to me, I think, that, you know, the course I was on was the right one, the course of change, and it was just really nice to get that tip of the hat. Gone out the door, as they say.
Oh, well, brilliant. I mean, it was so well deserved. And I was chatting to, we can talk about this a little bit now after your first choice of music, but I met Kevin down with Maureen Doughty the other day, and he'd been in, and he was waxing lyrical about his experience. So really praise indeed. So interesting. We can chat a little bit about that afterwards. What have you picked? I know you're great. You're mad into your music, right?
Oh,
delight have you picked for your first choice?
This first one is London Grammar. It's a song called Rooting For You. And just kind of...
Does this remind you of your London days?
Yeah, somewhat. And it's a very soulful tune, and something that when I drive home from work on a really hard night, I have my old selection in the car, and that's one of the top picks always. It's a beautiful song, really beautiful.
Let winter break.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine. 106.8 Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. I'm Ed Finn, and I'm here with my special guest, Corkonian Ross Lewis. Hey Ross, welcome back.
I'm still here anyway.
That was a lovely piece of music there. Ross, for anybody now who is going to be getting excited about booking Chapter 1, and already the reviews have been 10 out of 10 plus. What is the new look, Chapter 1, if you like, or the second coming of Chapter 1 looking like?
Well, I suppose, we've given the place a facelift, and rather than change it dramatically, we've kind of enhanced, I suppose, what was, you know, our interior and our colour schemes, etc., etc. And it's a bit pared back, and it's less cluttered. I suppose the main change would have gone, I suppose, from about 85 seats, and, you know, we were a very busy restaurant, did pre-theatre, did dinner. You know, on a busy day, we could do 200 covers, you know, and we've taken the tables down to kind of all round tables. It just looks more elegant, a little bit more super premium, I guess. And the 60 covers, round tables only. So it's kind of a more precise, I suppose, service and setup.
Wonderful. And your opening kind of reservations, your opening and closing, that's how it's working, isn't
it? Yeah, well, we always kind of did kind of 3 month blocks, you know, even with Chapter 1, because I remember years gone by, and, you know, we became a very popular restaurant, and, you know, I remember 1 year by, I think, May, we'd booked out, Saturday for the rest of the year. And it becomes a big issue for restaurants, because trying to get people in and regulars in, and you upset regulars and good people who've come for over the years. Now they're, you know, first they're saying like, oh, sure, never have any, you know, sure, there's no seats for me anymore now, they're so popular and so on and so forth. So, you know, there's lots of technicalities and so on and so forth like that. So, it's a way of controlling your bookings. Mm.
And in terms of the menu now, how are you determining that, or have you much input into that now, or?
It's all Michael now, so, you know, one thing I was very clear of, obviously, that, you know, something like that wouldn't work if I was just at the background of the kitchen.
Too many cooks.
Do this, do that, too many cooks. He's a big lad as well. Yeah. And I wasn't going to get in his way, but, you know, that's the deal, and that was never part of the deal, and it would be very simplistic and stupid to think that, you know, we could blend his food and mine. So it's a clean sweep, you know, absolutely clean sweep, 100%, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, is there a Nordic cool element to it now with Michael?
I mean, his food is very precise, it's very complex, beautiful saucing, deep flavours in the sauce. I suppose, you know, he'd be doing less covers than I would, and, you know, it's more super premium, it's very elegant, there's still an element of comfort about the way he cooks. His food is really technical, but it's not, you know, arsey, as they'd say, you know, where, you know, and I've been to plenty of those places where I just, you know, and that wasn't going to be, you know, I wasn't going to be for Chapter One. I think that kind of a huge change to doing something like Nordic Scandi or something like that, you know, that was just never going to work. So I think that his food is just, I suppose, a more refined version of what we were doing, a bit more technical, and obviously because there's less covers, there's more time taken, so.
Yeah, and I mean, still very good around here in terms of producers and being able to get your hands on locally produced food? Do you find things, I know there was staffing issues now with COVID and everything like that, but how are you finding?
Yeah, I mean, the industry in general, you know, is going through turmoil with the staffing issues, you know. Look, there's been a proliferation of suppliers and goods in Ireland, which is wonderful to see. And I've been a member of Eurotalk since 1990. And I'm heavily involved in the administration of the organisation for some time. And the one thing I would say is that, you know, there's a deep understanding and appreciation from the customer now in terms of raw produce. And I think it came from the ground up, the consumer up, you know. And there's a proliferation of smaller producers, smaller farmers coming to the marketplace. And that's been a wonderful, wonderful change. But unfortunately, we find ourselves now in the perfect storm scenario where, you know, a lot of people trying to entice them back into work, and you know, people have had change of heart, people have now taken a big break and decided, is catering really for me? There's others have gone home, they won't come back because the rents and the deposits for apartments in Dublin are too high. And essentially, there's a whole myriad of complexities involved, which is not going to be easy to sort out, you know. I mean, we work in a very resilient and a very competitive business, actually. But for competitivity, you do need that transient, flexible workforce. And if it's not there, then you're not going, you know, prices will go up and there'll be less restaurants. And I predict that that's really what's going to happen in the short term. In the medium to long term, will it come back? You know, I'm not 100% sure about that either. I would have been 6-8 months ago, but the reality on the ground now is telling me something different, unfortunately.
Really? Yeah. And why do you think that is, Ross? I mean, do you think things have kind of changed? I suppose work has changed really a lot in terms of people working at home, I guess, must be a big factor as well, is it?
It is, you know, and I mean, you don't have people in the city centre and, you know, the offices are cleared out. We're here now down the Docklands, and I mean, you can see, I mean, I have a restaurant over there in Clanwilliam Terrace, Lucho's, and like, you know, we're not open for lunch and we're just doing 5 dinners, and, you know, you're getting people from Sandy Mount, and suburban restaurants are doing well because essentially people have got into the habit of, like, you know, putting on something casual, walking around the corner and going into their local favourite. And habits are hard to break, you know. Once you form a habit over a year and a half that they've been doing it, you know. So, look, city centres will recover, in my opinion, that for sure. But there's a time lag, you know. And when is that time? And I think, kind of, as a restaurant, you need to be focusing on getting to next September, really, to kind of feel that you're over the danger time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you're saying about. Of course, it is competitive, and I sometimes wonder in your level, I suppose we could call it the level of excellence, is it something that, you know, I mean, there seems to be a certain number of restaurants in that area that do as well, and then I would imagine a very, very difficult area to break into.
Yeah, I mean, it's very expensive. The way the market has been heading for 15 years is you fast food, you've a large middle market, which has a kind of a lower tier and an upper tier. And then you're going to have like top end or super premium, call them. And there's going to be less of them around. Yeah, That's the way it is. And the reason for that is because labor is just going to get continually more expensive. The setup costs are huge. And, you know, people just don't want to take that chunk of investment. So, you know, restaurants like Chapter One and so on and so forth, you know, that there's not that, you know, you're not seeing that model opened, really, you know.
Yeah.
You're seeing people spend money on, say, like the Ivy Group, which is a big fit out and stuff like that, but they're mostly going into that middle area where generally 95% of the eating out population are, you know.
Yeah, and it's funny as well, I suppose the Michelin star, of course, is fantastic, but I mean, you're under pressure as well,
absolutely,
aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, did you find that a bit of a relief with Lucio's?
I do, actually, it's like freestyle, you know, it's like, you know, the shackles are off, you know. A fella says to me one day, sit at the chef's table, he said, you know, is it much pressure like holding the Michelin star? I says, what do you do? He says, well, I'm an architect. I says, well, it's like this. They could come into your offices once or twice a year, asked to look at your recent work, and basically, you know, they could scan it and say, you know, well, we don't think that work is really great or up to scratch, and they'd say, you know, we'll be back, and then, you know, they could come back a second time and say, well, we really still don't think it's good. They could effectively take away the letters from after your name. So, now, can you imagine that kind of scenario, you know, over your professional life? Having said that, you know, it's been a great Michelin, been great for me. We had a star. I had a star in Chapter One for since 2007. So that's quite a time, and you do get used to the pressure of it and all that kind of thing, but it was a net positive for us. It brought a lot of people to us, you know.
But it is such a special, I mean, there's just such a specialty to the Michelin thing. I mean, and I think people, even for tourism, even when people come, they love to, I remember people, they'd come here, they'd do Chapter One, they'd do Gilbo's, they'd go down to Kilkenny, they'd head up to Ox, our lovely friend Alan and Stefan. Yeah. I was up there recently consistently wonderful, you know.
Yeah,
but we're spoiled, there's so much good there. But again, as you said there earlier, the pressure is on, but it does deliver a certain something, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It brings people to your door, it brings press to your door, it gives you an element of professional kudos, and you know that counts for a lot in a chef's life, because you know it is the ultimate prize, really, and
the Oscar.
You know, it's the Oscar, and then, you know, you've one star, and then you've two star, and you've three star. I mean, even to get one star in your lifetime is just a terrific achievement. It's like, I suppose, getting a cap for Ireland. You know, they could never take it away. They could take it away from you, but you always have it.
Yeah, absolutely,
or always got it once. You know.
Yeah, and of course, it stays with you wherever you. I mean, you know, because it's innate talent, I suppose, isn't it, that creates it?
Yeah, I mean, they, like, if you moved from a restaurant to another restaurant and you were a star chef, they would re-look at you in that new environment. It's not a guarantee that they give it to you when you go. And then when you leave, the restaurant itself has to be re-inspected, the one you've just left, to see if that's of standard, and if there's a new chef come in and they're not of standard, so they could take it away from there and give it to you in the new place or not, you know. The one thing I'd say about them is, you know, and they have their, you know, they've plenty of detractors like any organization like that, you know. You know, they've been coming through my door for 27 years every year consistently, and you know, no other organization or inspector has done that, you know.
So amazing. Yeah, yeah. No, just really such an achievement. I think as well, Ross, we'll talk a little bit about Lucio's after your next piece of music now, and you've chosen another little jewel for us.
Yes, indeed. This is Aaron Neville, a great singer, and it's called Don't Fall Apart on Me Tonight. Yeah.
Now, I won't ask you the significance of this.
Exactly, yeah.
Is this to do with when you just get trainee chefs in, is it, or what?
That's one for them.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. That was another lovely piece of music there, Ross. I think you should be a DJ. Did you ever think about being a DJ at any stage?
Well, I'm old enough to have picked out a few decent tracks at this stage of
yes,
my life.
Remember, age, you know. You played Prefab Sprout the last time I had you on, one of my favourites.
Yeah,
oh, I brought
yeah,
you back,
yeah,
I'll
yeah.
tell you. Ross, just chatting there about Chapter One, of course, and the Blue Book, 47 years this year. Can you imagine? You were one of the first ones into it.
Restaurants.
Yeah, first restaurants. Hotels, yeah, of course, because it's houses, country houses, restaurants. Yeah. It's a lot of different things, experiences.
It was kind of determined, first of all, defined as like, hotels whose front door didn't open onto the street.
Brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. So they were all kind of in estates and behind walls and gardens.
And you qualified,
it was a country house. And they decided to take, they had no hotels in Dublin, and so they decided to take a couple of restaurants because they wouldn't be competing with the country hotels, you know. So they took ourselves and Gilbo's and Lecrivan, actually, in the first year. So
And you weren't opening out onto the street, either. You took it down the stairs. So you totally qualified.
We were Dublin One. We brought them back down to earth.
That's a posh Dublin One part you're in there. Like, it's very nice. That's gas. It's just wonderful to see. I mean, I suppose they've 50 something properties now, 52 or more, and
have
more
they?
Coming in as well.
Wow,
so it's been going well. So it's been good. I mean, again, for tourism, I think, and for the US market, a nice one, because they love the Blue Book in America, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you talk about the Blue Book, you really talk about authenticity, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really at the back of any great brand. And the fact that these are individual houses dotted around the country, mostly run by the people who own them, who live in them, and you know, it's a, you know, kind of the cradle of Irish hospitality. I think that Myrtle Allen, whom somebody I had huge respect for, has decided to open a few rooms because she had the restaurant in the farmhouse, and as a farmer's wife, she decided, oh, we've all this amazing produce, why don't we have a restaurant? And then the restaurant got so busy there was nowhere to stay. And people are driving from, you know, all sorts of places. And so she decided to open a room, some rooms. And that's kind of, that was the start of the Irish Country House Hotel, you know, herself and a few other stalwarts, of course. And I think that's where the kernel of the Blue Book originated, you know. So.
Have you ever, looking ahead for yourself, did you ever think about that? Did you ever think of buying a nice little place remotely in some part of Ireland and opening up a few rooms yourself? Yeah. You'd probably be great at it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I put enough coins in the piggy bank, Ed, but the thought of it is wonderful. Yeah, you know, I've often thought about that, and I just, you know what, I came out of Cork in 1985, and I lived in Manhattan, I lived in Geneva, I lived in London, and then I came to Dublin, and you know, life has been full on, and would I be able for comfortable miles from nowhere and no theatres and no this, that and the other? I'm just not sure. Not yet anyway, it is the answer to that one.
Very good. Yeah, well, it's an interesting one. Maybe for the retirement, we'll see, you know. Lucio's, Ross, has another rave reviews about the food there, right? How would you describe it for people if they wanted to really to understand what you do there?
I mean, it's a casual Italian restaurant that serves very tasty. We do fresh pastas, authentic pasta dishes. We small selection of pizzas and good starters, main courses. I started with a friend called Luciano Tona, who's a kind of a big chef in Italy, and he used to be coming back and forth to Ireland, and I made great friends in food with him, a very educated man, a very erudite person when it comes to food. And he was always saying to me, oh, Ross, you know, you should do something Italian in Dublin, because there was, you know, this is 10 years, you know, when he was coming over 20 years ago, there was very little. And there's a lot of them sprung up now in the last 4 or 5 years, you know, around the city and, you know, Temple Bar and so on and so forth. But so I came across a property, Ronan Ryan was in there, and it used to be the old Bridge Bar and Grill, and they asked me to come in and help them, and I said, look, I'm not really interested, and then they decided they wanted to sell, so I bought it, and I always wanted something in the middle market, and I thought that area down there, Clanwilliam Terrace around the Docklands, you know, the South Docks was a good area, and at that stage it was just coming up and up and up, you know, and I thought it would be a good choice, so yeah, we're there, so I'm kind of in there full time now, kind of giving it a bit of love. I could never really give it my full attention because Chapter One was my full focus, and I decided not to try and write two horses at one time. So I had to learn very quickly now. It wasn't easy now.
Yeah, when you were saying, in terms of food types and I suppose the great foods of the world, Italian really, it's just, it is incredible, isn't it? I mean, Luciano's probably from a certain part of Italy.
Yeah, it's from Milan.
Yeah, so you know the food up there is amazing.
Yeah.
Is that something, and seasonal as well, is that something that that you enjoy? I mean, I know probably you haven't been able to travel that much, and you were a big traveller.
Yeah.
I was just saying to you there earlier, I was in Portugal in August, and wow, what it was to be. I did Porto and the wine valley up there, Ross Douro and stuff.
Douro,
and oh my, like, geez, yeah. It was just incredible.
I know.
Do you miss that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the kind of cream and the cake and cake is, you know, you get taken away now and again, or do you want to go wine tasting to Porto or whatever, you know, and it's a very hectic lifestyle, and you know, you refuse more than you ever accept, because I never had time, but kind of now I want to do the nice things, all of the invites I got to go places that I never took up over the years. But that's wonderful, and for me, like, seeing other cultures, and you know, Lisbon in particular and Porto are just, you know, they're on the money in the food. There's a very young, dynamic kind of set of chefs there, and they're really kind of forging ahead, and it's very exciting, and that's an amazing thing to do, to travel and to eat and to see, and it's part of the learning process and part of the inspiration you get actually as a chef, you know, it's incredible.
Yeah, even going down to Cork sometimes, you can get a lot of inspiration
I'll tell you something now, Ed Finn. When you and I were going to Presentation Brothers Cork in our short pants, and we used to go across town to get the number 8 bus outside Rochestown, which is now Debenhams, now gone.
Rochestore.
I used to run to the market holding your nose because there were no refrigerated bin areas and stuff. Do you remember that?
I do.
And
indeed.
I mean, it's honestly,
on tripe and
exactly. And honestly, it's become something really special. It's a place in my heart, actually, the Cork food, Cork market.
I
go down there as much as I can, and I know a good few of the traders down there, and Tom Durkin and Pat O'Connell and Kay Hart up in the farm gate.
Yeah.
And
Tom's Spiced
Rebecca.
Beef. I mean, my guilty pleasure is Tom's Spiced Beef any time of the year. You know, it's like sacrilegious for a Cork person to eat it during the summer. But you know,
it's a sign of age, Ed.
Yeah, listen.
when your guilty pleasure is spiced beef,
it's great. Do you think, that's interesting about that? I've often wondered why Dublin, Ross, why they didn't do that. I mean, St. George's Market in Belfast is actually fabulous. It's kind of similar to, they never seem to get that up here. It's funny, isn't it? And I mean, it would be amazing. Mm. Like the flower market, of course, and those kind of buildings. But it's a pity that it never seemed to, markets never seem to be to take off here, like in Europe and stuff.
I think Dublin, you know, that Smithfield was where the veg market was and all that, and that's an area, and they are doing something there now. But if you look at the Cork market, you know, it occupies the space of the heart and the lungs of the city.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was just, it's a geographical thing, and it's opportunity. Plus, it stayed in municipal hands, so it's in, you know, Cork County Council hands. You know, once you privatise things, then money becomes the objective, and you're selling to certain, you know, then you get kind of hot food places area, you know, because they want to put hot food. But you know, the market's still somewhere where people go to buy groceries and go to buy, you know, raw meats, proteins, vegetables,
daily
shopping.
In your expertise, Ross, and just for your advice, looking at the food scene here now, and the Young Chefs Awards are back and the Good Food Awards are back. I mean, for the future, if you're a young chef, what advice do you think the future is bright now?
Yeah, it's going to take a little time to get over, but I think the restaurant industry is a very cutting edge industry, and it's moving on all the time. You know, there's been, you know, there's it's hit a little bit of a period where it'll dim down a little bit before it starts back up again. But when it does, I think it's going to be very exciting. For young chefs, it's an incredible industry to be in, and the opportunities to travel and to learn are just vast. You know, it was incredible. In my day, I used to go to London, knock the back door of the Gavroche, and they'd put you on a list of 100 young fellas or young ones that were looking for a job there, and they might call you in 9 months' time on a payphone, even, you know. And, you know, that was it. Now, like, any chef could send a resume to the 10 great restaurants in London, New York, wherever they are, and I'll guarantee you they get answers like within the 24 hours saying, you know, come and see us. So amazing opportunity. There's some amazing things happening. You know, obviously Denmark is still very hot. You know, Spain was very hot for a while, and it moves around and it's exciting. It's a great place to be, and the great, you know, the great food family of the world. It's very, there are people with generosity in their hearts, and they live for today, and it's a great buzz.
Yeah, and the experience, of course, you know, the, I suppose what we would have called the normal experience pre-COVID, even though I know you were saying little, I mean, obviously less covers and things have changed slightly. I guess it may never be the same again, but I mean, who cares really? It is going to be a new thing, isn't it? And it's going to be something, yeah. The food is always going to be good anyway.
Yeah, food, I mean, look, you know, if you're looking at Ireland, I mean, people are really only dining out regularly, say in the last 10, 12, 15 years. I mean, when you think about it, probably from 2000, you know, there was a kind of redefining of a middle market, which didn't exist in Dublin. And Le Gulletin actually was one of the first of those middle markets to open up. And look at how many there are now, you know. So it'll always move on. It's very competitive. It's great for the consumer and it's exciting. And, you know, so, you know, whereas if you go to cities like London and New York, I mean, they're eating out for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years on a regular basis. And so I think Ireland's a special country. It has an amazing raw produce and there's some great talent. You know, they've all gone away and come back and, you know, that's where they've done their time and they've trained. And so it's exciting. Watch that space, as they'd say.
Brilliant, Ross. Well, listen, it's been absolutely wonderful to chat to you this evening and lovely to see you again. Congratulations. The mantelpiece is totally falling apart at home with all the awards. I mean, you've done the Irish food scene so proud over the years, and I said, and you have created so many great chefs, and really I suppose you could be called the father of the Irish food scene at this stage, even though you look great, I must say, Ross. You're on the cod liver oil, I'd say, are you, or something. You look terrific anyway.
Yeah, well, thanks. It was very nice of you to say that.
And
I greatly appreciate it.
What have you picked now for your last excitement?
The last tune is a catchy one, and it's Galileo by Declan O'Rourke. A good catchy tune, and it's lovely, very tuneful, and a very clever piece.
Wonderful. Well, listen, I hope to see you soon for a bowl of pasta somewhere or other, Ross. All right, thanks a million for joining us this evening.
Thanks.